Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by Fulton Stall Market, reopening their outdoor market in the Seaport District in May 2021. Learn more at fultonstallmarket.org.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. On today's episode, we are joined by Susie Karachi, who is the founder of The Mediterranean Dish. The Mediterranean Dish is a leading online resource for cooking spanning the breadth of Mediterranean region from south of Europe to North America and the Middle East. We talk about the origins of the blog and how to adapt your diet to the Mediterranean cuisine. Later on in the show, we're joined by Salt Lake City Cinders, who's been building a solid following with their infectious indie pop rock. The band gives us a live performance, which includes Growing Up, the first single from their new album dropping later this year. Thanks for listening. Sit back, relax, and here's another episode of Snacky Tunes on HRN.
We talk about food. We talk about music. That's just the way it goes, it's breaking by design.
Over this, too old for.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. We are joined today by Susie Karachi of the Mediterranean Dish, an incredible website for all things Mediterranean recipes. Super approachable, really easy to cook from. We love it over here. And Susie, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Let's go back to your youth. You were born in Egypt. Take us back. What were some of the earliest dishes and flavors that you remember from your childhood that you associate with that time?
Oh, wow. That's a big list. I was born and raised in Port Said, Egypt, right on the Mediterranean. And I remember eating a lot of seafood, a lot of different fish and other seafood dishes, just because being on the Mediterranean, that was pretty accessible and very fresh. So my mom did a lot of that. We never had a meal without a few salads. So that was another thing that was just kind of like the way that we ate.
A few salads.
Right. Yeah.
What were some of the salads? And was it always different or some like fall seasonal, or was there some just like you always had to have this salad on the table no matter what?
So we always had just this simple tomato and cucumber salad that most of the Middle East and the Mediterranean will have a version of. And then depending on the day, my mom could repurpose any other veggie for a salad. We always have like lots of small dishes on the table. I just remember a lot of vivid, very bright foods. And obviously some of the main like super Egyptian things, such as like we have falafel, obviously everyone knows what that is now, and lots of different like stuffed veggies, like stuffed grape leaves and that kind of thing in the Egyptian style. So it's a long list. I can go on.
I mean, it sounds wonderful. What are some of the techniques that you use today that you learned in your mom's kitchen, cooking at her side?
Yeah, for sure. How to roll grape leaves.
What's the secret?
Yeah. Well, I think it comes with practice. And I used to sit with her at the round kitchen table and she would open up the leaf and she would say, here's where you trim it. You put this much rice, don't put too much or it will just explode and that kind of thing. So, and then she would show me fold here and fold there and kind of roll it up, away from you. And so I did a lot of that with her. So I remember that for sure. Also working with phyllo dough, I learned from her, because a lot of people are afraid to work with phyllo because it breaks and all of that. But I'm very comfortable working with it, like for baklava and other things like that. So,
It's interesting. You bring up grape leaves, which is, head on a simple dish. And I think we've all had good stuffed grape leaves. Very rarely do you get great stuffed grape leaves, right? Like a good national dish or a good thing. It's like the Spanish tortilla. You can get a good Spanish tortilla, but to make a great one, you've got to do it right. 1,000 times. Are there any other dishes besides that? Because I think most people by now know stuffed grape leaves. Are there any really dishes that come to mind that are like, if you look at it, you're like, oh, that seems simple, 5 ingredients, one thing, but it takes a lifetime to master.
Yeah, for sure. We did a lot with stuffed things. Like my mom also did stuffed, like our turkey for Christmas would have been a stuffed turkey with frika, which is not, I think is not super easy to make. And I don't make that today for my family, but it's another one. And like stuffed chicken and all sorts of stuffed things for some reason was a deal like at my parents' house. I do remember though, like working with seafood and fish, especially. I think a lot of people, at least in my circle, are afraid to like, for example, grill an entire fish. And we do that and we love it. So that one is more Alexandria style from Egypt. And the way we did it was just on a flat a flat grill, something like a cast iron flat grill, which makes it a lot simpler than trying to work on the on your gas grill. So, yeah, I think if I had to sit down and think of all the big things that I learned from my mom, it would be a long list. Yeah.
You traveled extensively around, you know, the area where you grew up. How did you see the flavors and ingredients you grew up with reinterpreted when you got to other parts of the region?
I did a bit of traveling with my parents, but more as an adult, I kind of paid attention to food and different cultures and customs. And I think, like, for example, Greece. I traveled to Greece as an adult and just loved more the similarities between Greek and Egyptian food. There's a ton there. And that's probably not, it's not uncommon, because in Egypt, we had a lot of Greeks living in Egypt for a long, long time, up until recently. My family, actually, we have some very close Greek friends we lived with. And so I think it was interesting for me as an adult to see that translated in, like, when I traveled, and to see things that, you know, like grilled sardines, or obviously stuffed grape leaves, all sorts of different salads, very, very, very close to what I grew up with. So I, for sure, I love celebrating the common things that Mediterranean countries have together, and just living in a port city, because Port Said is the main port to the Suez Canal, which has been in the news lately. We had all sorts of people and influences, you know, from Italian to Spanish to Greek to Turkish, Lebanese, Palestinian, Israeli, all of these foods we all, like, borrowed and shared a lot of the flavors from. So I was never surprised when I traveled abroad to eat something that tasted like home. And I always loved that.
And for those who are not as well versed, what is the typical staple of a Mediterranean diet? What are you going to find the ingredients? I know you mentioned salad and some things, but, like, what makes up those dishes that are, this is the quintessential, you put it on the table, you go, oh, this is Mediterranean ingredient.
Yeah. I feel like, if you were to think about the essence of, and this is hard to distill down to a couple of ingredients, but if you were to find the essence of, like, cooking the Mediterranean way, you'll probably see among all Mediterranean countries in common, olive oil, garlic, and tomatoes. Those are going to show up a lot in Mediterranean cooking. And then we love to use our fresh herbs like no other. It's not just it's not just the garnish for us. We'll throw handfuls of fresh herbs in our cooking, and that makes it a lot more exciting. Citrus is another one as far as a flavor maker. So lemons, limes, anything citrus. But as far as the diet itself, like the Mediterranean diet, is really largely dependent on vegetables and fruits and grains, a little bit of seafood. And then at the very top of the Mediterranean diet pyramid, you'll find, you know, red meat, which we don't eat as much of. We can eat it frequently, but we don't eat as much of it in our diet. So,
you know, let's talk about the Mediterranean dish. You started in 2014. Where did the idea come from? What was set the stage for us? Were you cooking? Were you writing? Were people asking for recipes? Were you getting annoyed that you had to send the same stuffed grape leaf recipe 100 times over? Like, what was the inspiration for it?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I started it just as a hobby to document recipes for my kids. I have two daughters who were born in Michigan, and I was in transition between jobs because my family began to move for my husband's career. I came from a very busy life in fundraising and PR, and I found myself kind of needing something to do in between as we moved for his work. And so it actually was kind of a godsend to be able to do something, because I was in a pretty tough place to be after having a big career and then having nothing. So it was my husband's idea to start this website. He actually just came home one night and said, "Hey, I heard on the radio something about this thing called food blogs." And I'm like, "Oh, what is that? That sounds really weird." And so he said, "No, people like share their recipes." And I wasn't one to look for recipes because I just kind of cooked. I didn't think you needed to look something up. So yeah, I kind of looked the whole idea of a food blog up, and we sat in our home office and bought the Mediterranean dish for a whopping like $20. I started the blog. I said, you know what? It's crazy. I don't think anybody cares to read what I have to say about food, but I will do this at least for my daughters, because I think one place that you can teach your kids and one place that can easily carry your culture and heritage is your food. And so I thought that was a good place to document for them. Until 2016, I really was not doing it for work, but more for the passion and love for it and to share it with my daughters.
And what an amazing place, what an amazing place to put your creative energy and to have this outlet. I mean, if only just to keep yourself sane, to make that transition from a career to motherhood and, you know, being uprooted. And what a way to connect you, not just to yourself, but to your home as well.
For sure. For sure. And it was, a godsend. Once it started to pick up in 2016, I decided I probably should do this for a living. And that was that.
We're going to take a quick musical break, play a song from the archives, and then we'll be back with Susie from the Mediterranean Dish here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Liftoff.
You mentioned 2016 is when things really began to pick up. How many recipes had you published at that time? What was your readership? And what do you think attributed to the uptick 2 years after starting?
Well, a couple of things. I don't remember how many recipes I had up by that time, but I don't think it was very many. Maybe over 100 or so. That's a complete guess. I have no idea. But
you won't hold you to
at
it.
That point in time, I mean, I began receiving emails from people saying that they had been following these recipes, you know, lost some weight, been able to do this or that. And I was kind of starting to feel the need for a website that spoke to the Mediterranean diet in a modern and approachable way, and making these recipes accessible to people. So it was really people prompting me to say more about it, to share more about it. And so at that point, I was like, okay, I should probably be more consistent in sharing my recipes. I should probably take better photos of the food. So I picked up a camera and kind of started to learn food photography, food styling, all that jazz, you know, to make it more accessible and more desirable, I suppose. So I started to do more and more of it consistently. And that's, I think, that signaled to the search engine gods that here's this little corner of the internet called the Mediterranean dish and is doing something useful with Mediterranean food. And so I think the recognition began with that, with just organic search. Stuff started to show up and more people joined the journey. And I took social media seriously at that point. I finally joined the game and began to share with everyone. But really, it was just consistency and just a decision I made that it was going to be my mission to bring to the average person this idea of cooking the Mediterranean way.
Modernizing cuisine is always such a difficult subject. The new take on it, or new Mediterranean, or new Greek, or whatever. Yeah. What did you change, or what did you adapt for modern times? How, you know, and if you have an example of a dish that was, you know, cooked a certain way and then you modernized it, it'd be great to understand through that lens.
Yeah, for sure. And it is a hard topic. And we think about it all the time because there's just such a fine line between, adapting a recipe slightly and making it more accessible and completely butchering it. And I'm very cognizant of that. And it's always difficult. But I think for me, it really wasn't about taking one specific dish and then making it a different way. It's more about cooking the Mediterranean way itself, like showing people how to use ingredients that you can find at the store, but making them the Mediterranean way. So if you were to cook a pasta dish, probably if you want to follow the Mediterranean diet, you don't want to do a heavy cream sauce on it, but maybe something lighter with, you know, a white wine and garlic and lemon juice. And so it was, my approach is more like the general idea of cooking the Mediterranean way and just kind of consistently following the diet over time. And then sometimes I do share sometimes some traditional dishes, like a spanakopita with, you know, in the Greek, very famous Greek feta and spinach pie. Now, if you were to make that the traditional way, you would have to make the phyllo from scratch, which I cannot do. And most people can't, right? So yeah. I borrow the idea of like, go to the store and buy the phyllo dough and you can make this recipe at home that is adapted to our, what we can do today. Learning to make phyllo from scratch is probably not everybody's cup of tea. So there's always that solution, you know.
I also feel like you, as the authority on this, tell people that like, it's okay. Like, you don't need to do every single step of this. In fact, most of you would never do this. And then you're like, well, I'm not going to do it at all. It's like, to get flavor and the taste and everything, just here's the essence. Let's make this right. Super easy for the average cook. And if you want to go down a rabbit hole, here's a couple other ways. But for the average person, they don't have a lot of time. They have a family or busy or something like that. So that's what I love about your recipes. It's like, you know, I can make this. Even if I've never done this cuisine before, it's like there's at least a lot of entry points within what you're showcasing.
Absolutely. So like I will cook a lot of like sheet pan dinners and one skillet dinners and whatnot, which are not a foreign idea to the average American cook. Everybody makes a sheet pan dinner. Mine just happens to have, you know, Italian flavors or Greek flavors or some or something from where I grew up. Like I make a chicken shawarma, you know, sheet pan. And if you were to have to make that very traditionally, you need yourself a nice big vertical spit. You need all, you know, you need the chicken, the fat, all the other pieces layered on top, which who's going to do that? You know, you're not going to buy these big gadgets to keep at home, but you can achieve some of the flavors of that authentic chicken shawarma at home using your sheet pan. So
one of the things that you talk about is, you know, everyone talked about mother or grandmother or father influence, but you touch on your mother-in-law has been an influence as well.
Yes.
How has she come into your culinary world and what influence has she left on the dishes that you make and write about?
Yeah. So, I mean, I left home at the age of 17. I moved to the States for college. And so my connection with my mother's kitchen, I just kind of had to rely more on memory from when I was a child. The second half of my life has been very much influenced deliciously by my mother-in-law's kitchen. And she is Jordanian and her mother is Palestinian. And so I learned more of that to access the flavors of the Levant through my mother-in-law. So she showed me how to make things like kibbeh, and I make my falafel more like hers than the Egyptian falafel. She showed me tricks to make the best smooth hummus. Things of that nature I learned from her for sure. And my husband's family owned a couple of Mediterranean restaurants in Michigan, and I hung out there a lot with her and learned a lot of just little things as we went along. So yeah, for sure.
What is the trick to making a really smooth hummus?
It's ice, actually.
No.
Yes. Yep.
Please elaborate.
Well, so the thing is, first of all, to make the best hummus, you got to start with chickpeas, you know, dry chickpeas, and actually cook them and, you know, discard the skin. That's one thing that helps the smooth texture, because the skin is what kind of makes it, you know, a little bit thicker and lumpier. And then from there, while the hummus, the actual chickpeas are running in your food processor with the tahini and all of that, you drop a couple of ice cubes as the processor is going, and that actually helps whip it up and it becomes this fluffy texture. So
amazing.
Yeah.
So as someone who has written hundreds of recipes, millions of views, hundreds of thousands of followers, what is your advice for people who are looking to get into this now with all the news that the healthiest diet is the Mediterranean diet and people, you know, cooking more at home? I know that I've swapped out cooking with butter for cooking with olive oil, and that took a little bit of time to learn. What are just some advice and tips for people who want to try this and might be discouraged to take on a new type of cooking?
Yeah. I first tell people just, you know, throw out the word diet, because eating the Mediterranean way is really not, you're not giving up any particular food group that your body needs. You're just making some swaps, right? So you mentioned swapping butter for olive oil. That's a big part of eating the Mediterranean way. And I would say the second piece would be like gradually you're going to get to it. It's the Mediterranean diet pyramid is full of everything that you can eat. We focus at the very base of the pyramid on, like I said, vegetables and grains. And so, you know, slowly kind of switch out some of those processed foods to use more, you know, wholesome, more vegetarian, more, you know, whole wheat breads, that kind of thing. So I feel like it is a very sensible way to eat, and it's not a diet. So I think just kind of eventually your eating pattern will lead you to eating this way. And it's not about an overnight thing. It's more like over time, you'll see yourself gravitating toward eating more colorful things than just, you know, brown things. I have friends who joke about how much brown they eat, like in all the starch and all the meats that they eat. If you begin to switch out some of that, eventually you will be eating mostly Mediterranean.
Amazing. Well, Susie, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find you, find your recipes, watch you cook, get updates? How do they get a hold of you?
I am on themediterraneandish.com and on Instagram and Facebook at The Mediterranean Dish. My videos are on YouTube at The Mediterranean Dish.
Amazing. Get there early enough and you can have all of them. We're going to play another song from the archives, and then we'll be back with the second half of Snacky Tunes here on HRN.
This episode is brought to you by Fulton Stall Market, reopening their outdoor market in the Seaport District in May 2021. Fulton Stall Market is a nonprofit, indoor, public farmers market. It offers locally grown and produced, healthy and affordable, fresh food to the Seaport and Lower Manhattan community. Fulton Stall Market is a direct sales outlet for over 100 New York region farmers and small batch independent food producers. They have been operating as a public market to serve the Seaport community since 2015. While you shop at Fulton Stall Market, you can pick up a few guides from Escape Maker's informational kiosk. Escape Maker connects urbanites with local farm, winery, craft beverage, and culinary getaways within a day's drive or train ride of New York City. Learn about day trips from New York, where you can explore the best agritourism the region has to offer. Learn more at fultonstallmarket.org and escapemaker.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. We are joined by the band Cinders. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Hey. Do you want to introduce yourselves and your instrument for our audience?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you want me to introduce everyone? Yeah.
No, you do you.
All right.
We need the voice print so people, when you answer, they can get some ideas talking.
Okay, sick. So I'm Adrian. I play the bass and do backup vocals.
My name's Brad. I play the drums, and that's it.
He does backup vocals without a mic.
Without a mic.
Without a mic. Yeah, I'm important. My voice matters, but it's not heard.
And I'm Montana. I do vocals and guitar.
I'm gonna say lead. Amazing.
Lead guitar. So only one guitar now.
Well, we have to ask all bands and creatives, just how are you guys doing? It's been a year.
It's been quite a year.
Yeah. How are you guys doing?
It's been going well. So a lot of people didn't know what to do with 2020, and that's kind of how we started. But we had some shakeups at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020, and we're like, let's make 2020 our year, you know? Although we weren't able to play that many shows, we wrote our whole album in 2020, this new album that we have coming out. So we try to be as productive, we tried to be as productive as possible, but, you know, we still try to have fun at the same time.
It was actually kind of a blessing in a way that we didn't have the shows, because it really forced us to be in the studio and writing and all that kind of stuff, where shows are great and that's our favorite part of what we do. But they aren't, they kind of distract from the writing, because we got to practice, we got to travel for the shows, we got to do all that stuff. And so it really allowed us to have the time and focus to put the energy onto writing to make this album the best that we can.
It's so easy with shows to think like, I'm doing the work, when you're kind of doing a certain type of work, but not the work of new creation. But you can convince yourself otherwise.
Yeah, there's a lot of areas that you got to focus on.
Totally. But it was good though. 2020, other than, you know, everyone getting sick and whatnot, for us internally, you know, productive wise, it was a better year.
But we've still had some sad moments.
Oh yeah, definitely some sad moments.
If you're asking us how we are, yes, we've been in limbo and it's been weird and it sucks, but we're here.
Yeah, as a band, you know, we've been productive. As individuals, we've had ups and downs to go with that, for sure.
I mean, I think that's like the general consensus for the world. Like, we exist, but we've had some good times and some bad times.
We're alive to tell the tale of 2020, right?
I mean, if you're here, you're doing great. What's interesting about your music is that it seems eternally optimistic. It's very happy. I see like a lot of fist pumping and singing along just from listening to it. That's a choice, right? You could have written any type of music. How did you decide collectively to write this type of music, or to be focused on just looking on the brighter side, collective happiness of music?
You know, that is actually a tough question. A part of me thinks like, maybe subconsciously we just are really happy inside, but I don't think that's the case. I'm just kidding. We want our music to cheer people up. We want our music to be played during the fun times, not the sad times.
I mean, you know, sad times too.
There's a lot of music out there that you know, makes you pensive and you want to listen to when you're in a sad moment. But we kind of wanted to target the happy moments of, you know, you're with your friends, you're hanging out, you're listening to music loud, dancing, whatever. And the biggest thing was we wanted our live shows to be rocking. We wanted people to go crazy, and we want to go crazy. And you can't do that with, you know, melancholy, sad music. You can have melancholy, sad words, but as long as the music's
the Smiths,
as long as the music's high energy and fun, then people are having fun.
Of our songs, if you only read the lyrics, you'd be surprised at hearing the song behind it. So
yeah, and so, oh, sorry, go ahead, man.
No, go on, please.
I was gonna say to reiterate what Brad said was just like, it's way more fun. We've all played other styles of music before this band, you know, be it acoustic music or hardcore music or singer songwriter, whatever. Like, we've all done all that stuff. And this is just, I don't even think we had a conversation about it. I think it was just like, let's just have fun. Who cares what it sounds like? Like, just go kill it, you know?
Can we hear a song?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
Let's start with Afternoon.
Great. Here we are with Cinders on Snacky Tunes on HRN.
How long have you been holding your breath? Your face is turning blue again. Was it something I said? You shattered me, but that's okay. There were pieces of me I hoped would fall away. There's an anchor between the carpet and couch. It's pulling me down. I've lost this fight again. Just like the afternoon, I'm running. Still lost on how to deconstruct this box you built around me. I'm not sure what I've got left. My voice is trembling again. I've got to pick myself up. Oh, there's an anchor between the carpet and couch. Fight again, just like the afternoon. I'm running low, but I understand the glow that comes with the setting sun. Just like the afternoon. I'm running low, but I understand the glow that comes with the setting sun.
as you mentioned, you spent most of 2020 in the studio. And you said that you weren't on tour and you were able to really focus. Going into this next album, did you find that there was any change to the writing process or the songwriting collaborations versus the earlier records and recordings, or was it more of the same, or did anything change?
It changed for a little bit because when the pandemic first hit, we were doing writing sessions remotely, and it was really weird. It was definitely a unique experience for us because we did it through Zoom, where I was sharing my, because I have the computer that has the recordings and the mixes and everything. So I was sharing the audio from that, and we were all, you know, from our separate homes, throwing out ideas and suggestions and writing. And it's just that portion of it was definitely odd. Trying to do something that we typically do all in the same room separately. You don't have the instruments that you can kind of jam with each other on. It's just kind of like all these ideas living in our heads, trying to convey them over, you know, the internet, and it just felt weird. But as things started to slow down, we started grouping up again, and that once we started doing that again, it felt like we were back to our normal roots of writing, and it definitely helped us a ton.
Do you think that there were any songs that came out that could only have come out because you were in the pandemic and you were separated, or do you think these batch of songs would have been birthed one way or the other?
I think that they would have been birthed one way or the other, maybe not as good. Not to, you know, toot our own horn or anything like that, but I feel like...
Toot away.
Yeah, no, I feel like we would... I don't want to say settling is the right word, but I think we would have settled for earlier drafts of the song because we were on, you know, before the pandemic hit, we toured, you know, the full U.S. twice through that time and abroad. And so we didn't have much time to really sit down and focus. So I think we would have came up with ideas on the road and like, oh, that's so sick, let's just lay it down. And then kind of been like, oh, that's fine, like, we'll work out the kinks on the road. But now when we have no one to really show the mock trials to, we had to be really introspective in the sense of like, hey, this sucks, or this could be better here, you know? So I think they would have all been birthed, but yeah, just not as fun.
Were you able to all push each other too, now that you couldn't use like the audience as a litmus test? Did communication grow better as a band? Do you feel tighter as a unit from being in this kind of isolation together?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we lost a couple members of the band right before the pandemic hit. And so like that alone, like, I don't know if I can blame it on the pandemic or the fact that there's less of us, but we've definitely become very close knit and very tight. And it's honestly been amazing. You know, it's just three best friends doing this thing together. And it's just forced us to, I mean, when you have such a big band, the writing process and the working process, you kind of go into groups and work on stuff together, and these guys are working on this, and you know, it's a team effort, and teams aren't always, you know, in the field or on the court. Sometimes they're in the sidelines doing other stuff. And so with having three people, it's like having five people on a basketball team. Like, you're always there. You can't just like sit back. And so it's kind of forced us to always be the ones that are, you know, moving things along. We can't take a little break. And so,
well, these two, Adrian and Brad, very rarely wrote lyrics in the past, and they really expanded on that and helped a ton with lyric writing, you know, bringing their own full-on like verses or sections to me, as well as editing certain lyrics or like changing certain things to add more emotion. Like, they've definitely improved in that aspect, and it's super fun working with them lyrically on that now too.
Can we hear another song?
Yeah, totally.
What are you going to play for us next?
So this one is our single that came out in
February
26th. It's called Growing Up.
It's so funny how growing up is also a part. If we knew it in this way, why'd we even start? I'm over this, too old for it. I bet you thought that growing up would make you more mature, but I feel more like a kid than I ever did before. I'm over this, too old for finding peace of mind in all the time. I guess that's just the way it goes. It's breaking by design. Yeah, yeah! Everybody wants a piece of me, and I don't know why. There are only so many parts before I roll over and cry. Growing up shouldn't even be allowed. Why do all these things? I'm over this, but I'm old enough to know that I'm not who I thought I'd be by now. Growing up shouldn't even be allowed. Why do all these things? I'm over this, but I'm old enough to know that I'm not who I thought I'd be by now. Growing up shouldn't even be allowed.
You're finally beginning to release new music. There is a new album on the horizon. Can you feel the anticipation building? Can you feel a sea change, if you will?
Yeah. I mean, again, not to toot our own horn. We never did anything so stressful and awesome at the same time. Like, we've been super DIY until this album, where everything we had, we just, you know, scrounged up some money together to try and get it mixed and mastered, and just was like, here you go, world. We released it on our last album. We released our first single in January and released the album in October, with like nothing in between. We were just like, let's just put out music because we have it. And now we got our new manager, and we told him we did that, and he laughed at us. He's like, yeah, that's not how this is going to go anymore. And so he's shown us some things to, you used a good phrase. What'd you say? The tides are turning.
Mm-hmm. I really change.
Like,
yeah.
Sea change. Yeah, man. Cause like, we were fortunate enough. We had this vision board in our studio of things that we wanted to achieve. And we were like, oh man, like, we want to be on a Spotify editorial playlist, cause we had never had that before. And we were fortunate enough with that first single, Growing Up, that we just played, to get on 3. And so we were like, ah, This is starting to get some good hype, as well as some good local press, and featured on like satellite radio and whatnot too.
Well, we just barely came back as well from a music video shoot on this first song that we played, Afternoon. the music video for Afternoon. It was crazy because we filmed it out in LA.
Ohio.
It's pretty much LA. And it was directed by Josh Radner, who, I mean, he's a very famous actor, director. He's done a ton of stuff, as well as it starred Abigail Spencer, who is, you know, another famous person. And like, just us hanging out with famous people is crazy. Like, when you say tides are turning, it's like we've never done that. And so it's very fun and very unique experience that we'll always hold on to. Yeah.
So as the country and the world gets vaccinated, and as musicians who love the road, when you close your eyes, you think about it, like, what do you think you're going to feel right before that first song is played for an audience?
I think we're all going to be crying.
Yeah, I'm going to be crying genuinely.
Yeah, I mean, I think every musician's going to feel the same, but it's just going to be like, I remember now, like, this is why I'm doing this. This is my love. This is what I find so much joy out of. And I mean, there's a lot of musicians out there that they're not in it for the shows. They just want to write music and release it and stuff.
Perform music. Some of them don't even write it. They just want to be, you know.
And, but I mean, we're one of the live bands. We live for shows. We want to hear fans screaming. We want to do all that stuff. And so, I mean, I'm just going to have goosebumps the entire, you know, 45 minute set. Like, my skin's going to be exhausted at the end of that show. It's going to be like, whew, that was brutal, man.
And then it's going to suck after that first show, because it's like, that instant high has those instant lows, man.
That's true.
Well, I want to make sure that we have time for one more song, but where can people find you, find your music, follow you, get all the updates, make sure that they stay tuned for the releases that will not be coming out 9-10 months apart?
just about everywhere, it's Cinders Music. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Adrian always likes to bring
MySpace.
MySpace, which is not true.
But we do have a Tumblr.
It's all at Cinders Music, as well as on Spotify. It's just Cinders. And
we have all the links on cindersmusic.com if they just want to go there.
Great. Amazing. What are you going to play for us last?
This last song we're going to play is a little bit of a sneak peek. It's a song called A Fix of Nostalgia.
Amazing. Thank you to our food guest. Thank you to everyone for tuning in today. Thank you, Cinders, for joining us. We'll be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. We'll see you then. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Sometimes you just might walk away.
Talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Thanks for listening.